Welcome into the BBP. This is the Bengals Beat Podcast presented by Inquirer Sports. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers, Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Ossarski, invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out the insider news as well as listening on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Just search Inquirer Bengals Beat Podcast. And as always, you can listen on our free Cincinnati Inquirer Bengals app. If you don't have the app, well, I suggest rectifying that situation immediately in the App Store. Now, if you're down with BBP, let's go. All right, welcome to the latest edition of the BBP. Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Ossarski are here with you. And, you know, therapy, a little bit. It's going to be therapeutic. We hope that we can help talk everybody through these trying times. And, you know, I know a lot of you are sitting there trying to decide if you're still going to be Bengals fans. We hope that we can bring some clarity to the situation and make you feel better about whatever decision you decide to make in that regard.
Yeah, it's funny, Paul. This is one of those moments of, I think Bengals fans are just, I don't want to say confused, but it's like, why don't we re-sign the old guys? But why don't we play the young guys ever? Like, it's, yes. I think there's like this weird, there's a weird, you know, what's going on. I don't know. I also thought people were sort of knowing Kevin Zeitler was on his way out the door. I mean, we've pretty much been saying it and writing it since they picked up his option in 2015. Like, I don't, but you know, until it actually happens, I guess.
There's always hope
socks,
out there.
Yeah, it socks people over the head. Although I will say regarding Zeitler, I did see a lot more rational Bengals fans, like, whoa, like $60 million for a guard. Right. But the Whitworth thing for sure, I think really got to people a little bit.
Yeah.
But
yeah, there's a lot of Bengals narratives fighting with each other.
Yes.
During all this. You know, yes. Young guy, old guy, they're cheap, they should pay. Why'd they give Dre so much money? You know, it's like right. there's all these different things fighting with each other. Let me open for those of you that aren't keeping up with everything with just doing a quick recap of where we're at. So Andrew Whitworth signs with the LA Rams, ends up 3 years, $36 million, a ton guaranteed, a shockingly huge contract for a 35-year-old tackle. Even as well as Whit has played, it became sort of a no-brainer for him when you consider somebody really throwing that much money at you that late in your career. It just doesn't happen in this league. So he decides to go over to the Rams. Kevin Zeitler gets, like you mentioned, $60 million from the Cleveland Browns. A couple of bidders were involved in that. 31.5 guaranteed, 28 in the first 2 years. I mean, just a massive resetting of the guard market for Kevin Zeitler. So congrats to him for cashing in. He was part of a Cleveland rebuild. Cleveland spent a crap load of money on the interior of their line, reinvesting in Betonio, getting the center from Green Bay, and Zeitler as well, trying to reload up there. Dre Kirkpatrick ends up being the one of the big three that the Bengals are able to get a deal with. It's big. 5 years, $52.5 million for Dre Kirkpatrick at 10.5 per. He becomes a top 10 paid cornerback in the league. And Brandon LaFell kicked it off before anything really got going. They give him a 2-year deal at $10 million. So $5 million per for Brandon LaFell. They love what he had. As far as people that are still out there, Rex Burkhead obviously out there making visits. Connor Barwin from Philadelphia is in town with the Bengals as we record this. And then you keep going down the line. Late news right before we recorded, James Wright was released. Eric Winston is back as well. That's where we stand. Let's start with Andrew Whitworth, shall we?
Sure.
All right, people.
Yeah. All right, I'll let you roll on this one for a little bit.
Go ahead, everybody. I know that you know what I did. I enjoyed. I know you enjoyed this. That the first reaction when the Whitworth news broke was so many people could not wait to find out when my 5 mock drafts in 5 days was going to be. After I made that willy-nilly promise on the last podcast, that I would do 5 mock drafts in 5 days if Andrew Whitworth left. That's how confident I felt that he would re-sign. And I think the Bengals, I know the Bengals were confident like that as well, which is where that came from. I think they, like many people, were very, very surprised when LA came out with that huge, huge offer at left tackle for Witt. So I'll just say this, you know, the whole concept of being so confident about Andrew Whitworth, from my perspective, came from people inside the Bengals organization and from a history of the Bengals doing really whatever it took to get their number one priority taken care of. And so many people over, no matter who I talk to, players, coaches, on the record, off the record, other sources, everything pointed to Andrew Whitworth being what they wanted to get done. And I just think that they eventually couldn't mortgage casting Cedric Obwehi completely away and just calling him a bust already is what it ended up coming down to. Because I just don't think they expected it to end up going to 3 years and that much money guaranteed.
Yeah, I didn't get a sense, Paul, that that the two sides could separate until Tuesday when the open tampering started to happen, I guess. And I know we did a Facebook Live, and even then, I still thought it could happen. So I think the way it played out was the Bengals said, look, do what you got to do. You're free agent for the first time. See if you can get the big money. And if you can, you know, Godspeed. If you can't, or if it's close, we'll give you something you can be happy with. And I think, but be happy with is be happy with a year-to-year kind of deal. And I think it's out there, you know, Witt has kind of floated that it's, you know, kind of like a 1 year, $10 million was on the table, would have been the most money he ever made in a single season. But yeah, you're right, Paul. I think clearly the Rams came in with the mega deal, you know, and, you know, I think it's really a 2 year deal. I mean, hopefully Witt can see the end of it and he plays good till he's 39, you know? You know, you're right. I think this was the plan all along in 2015 when they drafted Cedric Obwehi and Jake Fisher in the first and second rounds. And let's be real, Paul. Like, if Cedric wasn't awful last year, Bengals probably don't even make an offer
right
to Witt, because this was the plan. They drafted Cedric Obwehi and Jake Fisher for those two guys to be your starting left and right tackles in 2017.
Correct.
Now, how they've gotten to this point is definitely debatable. This is something I'm sure we'll spend a lot of time on podcasts about in the spring camps, in training camp, and all that stuff. But you're right. I think that money was just too much. The years were too much. And let's face it, unlike Darquez Dennard, which clearly the team is like, oh, all right, whatever, maybe we whiffed on this one. They couldn't do that with Sed yet, because look, they're going to need to make a $14 million decision on him in a year or two when it comes to picking up his fifth year option. So, and that's how the team looks at it. I know fans don't want to necessarily hear that, but they look a year, 2, 3 years down the line. And, you know, hey, dude got $38 million for 3 years. You know,
I will, let me say this. I have continued to take issue with the Darqueze Dennard treatment, and the comparison is interesting for me. Are we to believe that Darqueze Dennard has played worse than Cedric Obwehi played last year and doesn't deserve an opportunity as well? And eventually, you know, someone's got to get paid, and Dre got paid, and I think that we'd be having this same conversation if they would have found a common ground with Witt and not come to a deal with Dre, with Dre Kirkpatrick, because then it would be about, well, Darqueze has got his chance and we believe in him and blah, blah, blah. But that narrative can't really necessarily be the same, although he will get some starts next year depending on what happens to Adam Jones. Still, that opportunity is given to Cedric. Plans should change when a guy is that bad, as he was last year. But at a certain point, and this is what we have said over and over again, at a certain point, your picks have to be – they're going to define you as a franchise. And they always will, when you especially when you have the philosophy that the Bengals do. Your picks, particularly in the 2 to 4 years out range from when they're selected, will define you as a franchise, and this is that – to a T, and that's it, and that's what this is about. Now, I can tell you right now that they absolutely wanted Witt and back, and thought they would get Witt back. I think they wanted another year of being for sure on Cedric Obwehi, because they're clearly not, or they wouldn't have been going over Witt and been as interested in Witt as they were. And is adamant about it, you know. And now Witt and Pecco are both gone. I forgot to mention him in the beginning. He signs with Denver. He's going to be with the Broncos now. And when you have players, when Andy Dalton and AJ Green, the first thing they say when they see me at the Super Bowl is, "We better get Witt back. We better get Witt back. That's number one. That's what we need. We need Witt back." When that's what's being said, you know, now what do you have on your hands with your locker room?
Well, you have Andy, as Marvin Lewis said at the press conference you were at with Dre, is it's Andy Dalton's offense. It's AJ Green's offense. And look, Marvin kind of started to lay this track on Beyond the Stripes with us, and even in the season-ending press conference with AJ's going to be after more vocal. Gino is going to have to be more vocal. Like, I think Marvin, you know what I'm saying? Like, at some point, you got to turn the page. And while I get you with Andy and AJ, they're guys. You know what I mean? Like, they all want their guy back. Like, they know Witt. You know what I'm saying? Like, of course. And he's a good player. And Cedric is a question mark. I mean, I get all that. But, you know, I'm sure they're slightly upset, but the Bengals didn't do wrong by any of those guys, so they understand it's a business. It's Andy's time. And here's an interesting – Paul, you wrote this really great story Super Bowl week comparing Matt Ryan and Andy Dalton, and you were really looking at their on-field performance. But to this point, Thomas Dimitroff, the Atlanta GM, said this at the Combine, which is really interesting, when he said that Matt Ryan took incremental steps as a leader in the locker room over the years. And last year, he became the guy in Atlanta, like vocally. Like, it was interesting to hear him say that at the Combine. So Matt Ryan's, what, in his 30s? Obviously league MVP, so it's the things you can say, but it was funny that here was this guy saying it took that guy, that quarterback, all these years, what, 8, 9 years? Who was leading the charge in Atlanta? You know what I mean? So I think maybe that's where Marvin's at with this. Maybe, you know, Andy's going to have to step out of the comfort zone or grow into it. You kind of heard, I mean, that was a part of the crux of that story, that feature we wrote a year ago. So, you know, yeah. I'm sure they're upset, but they didn't do wrong by him. You know what I mean?
No.
So,
no. I'm sorry, cut you off, but I do want to bring in that you mentioned the Marvin stuff. So we have the press conference for Dre Kirkpatrick. Marvin is there, and in the middle of it, As Marvin had just been sort of sitting there, sort of listening to Dre answer field questions after Marvin had made an opening statement. And finally, someone turned to Marvin and said, "Hey, how's free agency been on you?" And he sort of like moves and shakes in his chair and sits up and says, "I'm glad you asked me that." And what followed was something that he had been sitting there the whole time waiting to spout off of it. I had to do the copy paste and find out how many words his answer to "how free agency been on you," 591 words followed, and including a series of answers to questions, talking about Witt, talking about Andy Dalton accepting the torch, and all of that. I think it's interesting, putting it into the perspective of this whole conversation we were just having. So here is the end of that press conference in that section from Marvin Lewis talking about Andrew Whitworth, free agency, Cedric Obwehi in the future of this team, and where it goes after what has been a rocky few days for the Bengals in their front office.
Marvin, what's this process kind of like for you? Free
agency is not forever. Good, I'm glad somebody asked that. You know, it's my first year in the NFL was 92, which was the kickoff of free agency after the 92 season. I literally coached one of the guys who was part of the suit against the NFL in Hardy Nickerson in that. And I know the emotion of it that Hardy went through. The first guys that changed teams, I got to coach two of those guys. And Gerald Williams, who left us at that point, and then Kevin Green, who came to us, and as well as Hardy. So I watched three guys, you know, change through the process. And so the NFL process, it's a positive process. I know fans get nervous and so forth that way, and it gets people, "Oh, that guy's coming, he's going," and so forth. But unfortunately, or fortunately, for whether it is a play-for-pay system. And we have to continue to do a great job of drafting, developing our young talent. And, you know, we can't keep them all in the fold at some point. And guys look for opportunity to play. They look for more opportunity for this, for that, whatever it may be. But we've been fortunate enough, and the people upstairs have done a great job in continuing on with as many of our guys as we can. That's been our philosophy since I've been here, and it's been great. But, you know, Dre, all of these guys, they all jump through the same hoops to get here. We've got to have them jump every day and continue to move forward. And now we're going to have another evolution of some players. We had a couple guys who chose to go elsewhere. And we have a couple young guys, two or three young guys that we have drafted over these years to put into those spots. They went through the same process to get here. We feel the same way about them as we brought them here. And now it's their time to shine. And that's our job as coaches and so forth to get them to that level. And that's part of the, you know, the same holes were filled by the guys who left here at one point. And we went through the same process with them and plugged those guys in. These guys have had a couple years to stay behind and learn and mentor and so forth, get mentored and coached in shape, and now they've got to go shine. And that's part of it. So, you know, you would like to, you know, for coaches, we want to hang on to everybody we can. You just got to know it's not possible. And unfortunately, I don't know that everybody always understands that, that we have to continue to develop and move through the process. It's really, really important to maintain a level and to be great. And we're not there yet. We got to be great, and I think once that, you know, then you can continue to work forward. But it is. It's been the last 72 hours aren't a lot of fun. You know, a year ago I was away. I went to some college campus workouts that day. I chose not to do that this year. I actually canceled out this year, so I could be here and be part more and be able to these guys to talk to. You know, because they reached out and be able to answer back and what's going on, coach, you know, that kind of thing, because they want to know. And if I can help them in any way with that. And that's true with Kevin. That's true with Andrew and so forth, the guys that chose to do others. But it's good to have contact with them. These guys have laid their butts on the line for me, and they're a big part of me and their families, their wives, and so forth. And now, we get to continue on with some new ones.
How are you? A lot of regard for Whit. Is
that
a tough conversation, Coach?
That is. And, you know, there's nobody that's been more, you know, than Andrew and his family and what he's done how he's gone about it. But we cleared room for Andrew when we brought Andrew here. And, you know, and now it's time to move on. Andrew's done a great job of mentoring, you know, Cedric and so forth. So that's part of the process, and it's what we got to get done and move forward that way.
Do you ever feel surprised about what happens in free agency anymore?
I think so. Catherine and I would be telling you a fib to say I wasn't. But yet it is. You know, I think we got to feel good about it with, you know, Brandon LaFell. You know, a chance to a guy who was new to us last year, who really uplifted the building, the room. He aided in the development of, you know, of AJ, which is good. AJ has never had somebody like Brandon LaFell around him, and so that was great for AJ. And you know, and when AJ went out, Brandon LaFell continued. You know, he raised his level again to fill some of the void when we lost AJ.
So I mean, Dre, I mean, Sed and Dre obviously are in different situations, but Sed's had to wait his time. He's gone through some.
Remember the Minnesota game?
On the perfect mental.
And it's part of it, you know. And like he said with Terrence, I can remember we were in Kansas City, and I looked up, and 27 was running on the field in defense, and I'm like, what the hell is going on here? And they said, oh, we thought Zimmet said something to you. And but, you know, we tried, just like we did with Cedric, we tried to work Dre in as a young player to give him an opportunity to go out there and play. They need to go out there and play to get their feet wet so they understand what the task at hand is all about. And we think that's really important. And, you know, so it's got to be exciting. It's exciting for us as coaches. I think, you know, how we're going to miss the hell out of Andrew and everything he did. But yet we passed the torch. You know, the quarterback has picked up the torch, you know, and Andrew's done everything he can with Andy all the time. And now it's Andy's football team totally. And he's got to pick it up and go.
So there's Marvin Lewis. And as he said, the torch passes. Our quarterback has it. He's picked it up and he's going forward with it. You know, leadership. And kind of an interesting tangent on that, and something I'd be interested to talk to Andy about when he comes back with the team in April, is how hard is it to be a leader, even if you're the quarterback, even if you have the $96 million contract, even if you've been given the pat on the back by a coach, if you have a guy like Andrew Whitworth here who is just a leader among leaders. I mean, that's what he does. It defines him. Can you really do that when that guy sort of always is there with the final stamp of approval? You can work together and be right-hand man and kind of be the leader and all that, but I wonder if it's harder to do that when a guy like his wit here, and maybe it clears the way a little bit for him to do it his way and have his stamp on it. Without Witt there. I don't know. And maybe not. And maybe you say, no, it's obviously not easier without Witt. But maybe that will help free him up a little bit in that case.
Right. I can only pass on, I guess, what I know. And that was just my time in Milwaukee. And Aaron Rodgers had won a Super Bowl and won an MVP before I came to Cincinnati to cover the Bengals. And even then, every offseason, Paul, was, is Aaron Rodgers a good leader? This dude won an MVP in a Super Bowl. And they're every offseason, is Aaron Rodgers a good leader? Is he the right leader? And yes, I've been covering the Bengals for now. This will be my third year. But I do read around the league. And ever since then, there have been stories, is Aaron Rodgers a good leader? Right. So I think it's one of those things where it's depending on the personality. Really, Paul, the only ones that I didn't hear much about it were Peyton Manning and Tom Brady and Drew Brees. Maybe some Philip Rivers. I would hear some stuff, though, because he is kind of an over-the-top, yelly, screamy guy, that people wonder if that's the case. But look, I'm not even kidding. Like, driving through Indianapolis to the Combine, I'm not kidding you. Indy Talk Radio was just having this conversation about Andrew Luck. Is he a good leader? Can he get out of his comfort zone because he doesn't say a word? He doesn't say anything. He reads a lot of books and likes to walk around Indy at night by himself. Is he a good leader? Like, honestly, God, that conversation happened. So I know Bengals fans are sort of, we you and I think, try to, much to our detriment, in my opinion, because we, God forbid, we talk about other things on Twitter or bring up other people. But in the league, I mean, like, Andy Dalton isn't the only quarterback that gets hammered for stuff or they wonder about this stuff. I mean, I just named some quarterbacks that, you know, have pretty good track record of success too, and these questions are asked. So we'll be writing about it because Marvin put it out there. Andy's going to have answer to it, and I kind of guess what he'll say. But you're right. It'll be interesting. And what it does, because, you know, Witt's been there. So now Andy and AJ are the tenured guys, and there is something to say about that, you know?
Luck caught reading books too intellectual. You can see the headline in Indy Star, right?
Believe it.
That's it. Everybody's always got a knock. Let's move on because there's lots of other stuff to get to. And we, you know, the other half of this equation and really where this now becomes the storyline of the Bengals going forward is the offensive line. It's the clear giant hole on their roster. And no... there's really no way to see how it's going to fix itself. And a draft that's weak, you're not going to be fixing it at number nine. So a draft that's weak at offensive line, I mean, you're not taking a guy at nine. Maybe you're taking a guy at 41 for your offensive line. Maybe, I don't know. But you've now got positions that are either the same or way worse across your line.
Right.
And I mean, even if Cedric Obwehi breaks out, he's not going to be as good as Andrew Whitworth was last year. Maybe Jake Fisher, well, you would hope Jake Fisher will be better than what Cedric Obwehi was at right tackle last year. You hope that you've improved there. Hope. Yeah. You definitely, in a best case scenario, are way worse at right guard. You still have Russell Bodine, who improved last year, but was still pretty average when you look across the league. And Clint Bowling, who knows where he's at coming off of injury. If he's healthy, you feel okay with him at left guard. But he's not a superstar, you know.
Right.
That is an issue. And now with Kevin Zeitler gone, it's, you know, this went down the way I think you thought it would. And I think when those numbers came to light, as you kind of mentioned in the opening, it became a thing where Bengals fans, maybe some of them started to understand, oh, this is why the Bengals just kind of backed off, because they said that's a big number that they're not going to be willing to go to.
Yeah. The guard situation, Paul, is probably where I'm a little concerned. That's the right word. This is not my team. I guess I'm surprised that they didn't sign one of these sort of young veterans. And I know I've been beating the drum for a young veteran linebacker. And of course, what are they doing? They're bringing in a 30-year-old guy that might play linebacker for a visit. But I'll just mention Chance Warmick just because he kind of, to me, fit the profile. Like a longtime starter in the league, injured, which led to him being let go. You know, Tennessee, you know, saying, okay, we can move on. So he's got something to prove. 1 year deal in Philly for like $1 million. Maybe there's some incentives, but it's not even going to affect the comp pick. There's like a guy to bring in who's played, who can either A, start for you if he's healthy, or at least you're like, okay, here's a veteran guy, young veteran. So even if we want to give Christian Westerman the chance to start, or you know what I mean? Like that's what surprised me a little bit. At the guard spot. At tackle, Paul, I don't know what they're going to do if Cedric Obwehi's bad in camp, I'll be honest. But I can at least roll with it and get it and understand it. The guard spot, though, is interesting because you're right. Like, Russell Bodine is not great. So, and Jake Fisher is unproven. I don't know. I just thought if you wanted some solidity, it would be in your interior. And one way to do that is just sign one of those guys, I guess. So I thought for sure, it would have broken the mold a little bit, but I don't know. It's not like they would have been breaking the bank. So I'm surprised. And I don't know, Christian Westerman, TJ Johnson, Alex Redmond, Trey Hopkins is really the four-way battle you're going to go. You know, two undrafted guys that converted, you know.
It's looking like that. I mean, what's you really have a bunch of guys that are out there now where you kind of say, yeah, they're similar to what you've got. You mentioned a lot of those guys that you just let an opportunity go to have a veteran come. I mean, maybe they really think they have hidden gems in those guys. I don't know. I don't know right. what they think. All I know is that offensive line is going to be the reason they aren't good next year. If it doesn't, I mean, unless something crazy happens.
Although you were so solid in that prediction that maybe now Cedric Oubre is going to be a Pro Bowler.
Jesus.
Because your track record here of late is not real good. So, you know, maybe there's some solace Bengals fans can take.
Look, that was I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. You know what I mean? I use the hashtag I'm so jaggy, and I thought that might catch on just because it's shocking. And I was never – I mean, there was never a thing like – I think there's one thing I do want to say that's sort of been a discrepancy in this is that I reported that Andrew Whitworth is coming back. Like – I was not any. If you look, even if people were like retweeting my tweet when I said mark it down because Bengals, I said I don't need mark it down. He's coming back because they don't need any. I don't need to hear any more impassioned pleas to know how the Bengals feel, and that's where that came from. It was it's that's not saying fact. I'm saying you should mark it down because everybody keeps talking about how they want Andrew Whitworth back. Every single person. Right. Within the organization. So this was not fake news, so to speak. This was not claiming that it was fact that he was actually coming back. It was just saying that all things were trending towards that. Whatever. I don't know. I feel like there's some sort of hit on my credibility for this. You know what I mean? And that's just not the case. When this was not Whitworth signing back with Bengals, it was saying all these people can everywhere across the organization talking about how this needs to get done, should get done, and to think that a team would come in and drop that, surprising things happen. You heard Marvin Lewis even say it. Yeah, he'd be lying to say that he wasn't surprised by what happened in free agency. I think everybody inside of the organization was crazy. Surprising things happen. Brock Osweiler gets dealt and a second round pick, right? Crazy things happen that no one saw coming. And that's what happened with Andrew Whitworth. I take all slings and arrows over. I'm going to be doing five freaking straight mock drafts. Okay, people, y'all win, but crazy things happen, and that's sort of what happened here. What is not changing is that their offensive line is going to be worse than last year, and it was bad last year.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you. Because at the outset, there's nothing to say that it would be better. Other than thinking it can't be worse than 41 sacks and a run game that never got on track. So,
yeah,
because that wasn't good, even with those guys. And I understand the point of view, like those are your two best guys. They only allowed three of the 41 sacks and whatever. But it wasn't great last year. So, you know, maybe they just think that was the floor and it, you know, can't be worse. But I guess we'll see. It'll be really interesting, Paul, because Cedric Oboehe and, you know, has talked about, hey, I need a camp. I haven't had an OTA or a camp, but there's a reason for that. So he's expecting to be healthy. Well, what if he's not? I mean, what if he, you know, has another sports hernia or injures his groin or hurts his toe or his shoulder's hurt again? Or, you know what I mean? And Jake Fisher has had shoulder and back issues since joining the club. I mean, you expect health. But then Eric Winston's your backup right tackle right now. I don't even know who the backup left tackle is. Trey Hopkins? You know what I mean? So they've got some work to do. and especially in a draft class that isn't great, and they don't like to play draft picks anyway. So would you really want a fourth round left tackle in this draft being your backup? You know, so I think that's where Andre Smith kind of fits in again here, but even, oh. So you're right. I don't know. It's, but going back to how you started here, I don't, you know, I feel bad that you're, you feel your credibility is taking a hit. But I think that's just one of those things of Twitter though, Paul. I mean, we interact with people. You're sort of tweeting in a stream of consciousness in that particular moment. But the bad part of that is, you know, someone could go back 10 days, 2 weeks later and pull out a single tweet. You know what I mean? It's just, that's just the nature of it. So I don't know. I don't think anyone who follows
that one came after that, and that tweet that was pulled out came after Duke Tobin had gone off about how great he thinks Andrew Whitworth is and how much he wants him back. And if your director of player personnel is making that plea, that's when you just start to think, okay, this is going to happen. And that was after talking about Duke Tobin, talking to Duke Tobin and about him on Twitter. So yeah, I'm not going to keep going down this road, but there's too many other things to get to. No one cares about me. Let's take a portion of your conversation with Kevin Zeitler about his leaving and signing with the Browns for people, so people can hear from him on his process and how things ended out with him. So here's Kevin Zeitler.
I'll start. I mean, you kind of knew this was coming for you, you know, even a year ago when you know, things kind of broke down in Cincinnati. So I'll go there. What was, what does this mean to you, I guess, as a person, as a professional, you know, to sign this deal and to go to the Browns?
I'm very excited. You know, you put a lot of work in, you know, that first couple of years in the league, and, you know, every player wants to, you know, get to free agency. And, you know, I just have been lucky. I hit it at a good time, especially with the swing and the, you know, guard value. And I'm honored that the Browns want me, and I'm very excited to move on to this next part of my career.
Yeah. I know that you're kind of in your world and doing your thing, but now that you've seen...
Sorry, can you repeat that? My dog's freaking out.
But now that you've seen that they you know, extended, you know, their other guard to a big deal, they're bringing in JC from Green Bay. Obviously, they have Joe as a lineman, as a guy who works in a unit. I know you're all new faces together, but is that also an appeal to you? Like, okay, I'm going to a place that has invested in its own line, and, you know, all of us are sort of coming in together and, you know, have to make something new work there.
Yeah, I mean, it's been exciting to see all the moves the Browns have made, and, you know, it's very cool hearing about Petonio's extension and the signing of J.C. Treader. So I'm excited to get to Cleveland and meet those guys and to get to work with them.
Right. And what about, I would imagine, Joe Thomas? There are no rules on players reaching out to one another. Have you heard from Joe, or what is that kind of like to – I'm sure he's excited to have another Wisconsin guy come along.
Always great to play with another former player. And, I reached out to him a little bit, asked him some questions about Cleveland and whatnot. And, you know, he told me everything he knew, and he got me excited about it.
So, obviously, you know, you're leaving after 5 years here, first-round pick, and a guy who started from day one, which not a lot of draft picks can say in Cincinnati. What was what did your time here mean to you, both personally and obviously professionally?
I mean, I couldn't have asked for a better first 5 years in the league than to be in Cincinnati. I mean, I'm so thankful for the coaches, the owners, you know, taking a chance on me, you know, picking me early in the draft, and then, you know, allowing me to just go in there and play, you know, and learn as I go. And it was really great. You know, I had great teammates, and I think Cincinnati is, you know, they're in great position to bounce back and be great again this year.
Yeah. Is it, you know, I don't know. I know it's a strange thing, free agency, but I'm sure you've seen it, for sure your wife, maybe people close to you. I mean, the people here wanted you to stay here, and obviously you know how that goes. They'll turn and be mad at the guys working there. But I mean, what does that kind of say, or how does that make you feel, at least, that you've got a group, you know, a fan base here who supported you that much, or was really hoping that you would be back?
You know, it's great. You know, felt good. You know, that means the fans thought I played well, that I was valuable. And, you know, obviously, big shout out to the fans. They made the home games memorable and definitely gave us a home field advantage.
Right. A little, now, I mean, obviously this played out probably in the best way it could have. Are you just a little disappointed, though, that it did go the way it did, that I guess they were never really in it for you, or is that you just sort of chalk it up, hey, this is the business of the league, and didn't really think about it?
The way I would say is this, like, I think, you know, every player when they're drafted thinks they'll be with their first team their whole career, they want to be that, but the business side sometimes doesn't align with that, and I respect, you know, the whole Brown family with how they run their organization. They have their blueprint and they stick to it, and it's worked out well for them. So there's no hard feelings or anything like that. It's what they do, and, you know, I'm sure they'll be all right.
Okay, so now we move forward. And so after Witt comes off and Kevin Zeitler ends up going, but that was never really – it basically – when the conversation, they had conversations going with Dre Kirkpatrick and with Andrew Whitworth. And as those kind of went back and forth, and all of a sudden that morning, Whit says, I've got this huge deal, and he ends up going to LA. Conversations heat up about Dre Kirkpatrick. And this is how, and this is why we knew one of the big three was going to be back the whole time, was if one of them left, if Witt left, the money was going to get poured over to Drake or Petch. They were not going to let everyone go and be stuck standing there with their arms up and wanting to use that $10 million, $15 whatever they, however they view they have left. And so the numbers were upped with Drake or Patrick, and that gets done. Dre was in conversations with Pittsburgh. Tennessee was in the mix at one point. There were other teams. He says he even left some money on the table at the end of the day to come back to Cincinnati, a place that he wants to be. An interesting narrative that, and I'm sorry, that's the wrong word, an interesting concept that came out of talking to him after he signed is that, okay, and this builds into the Whitworth conversation we had about leadership and where the locker room goes from here, and that is, he really is the perfect example. And when they give contracts, they like to set examples for the young people in their locker room. That is, patience can pay off for you. And to have patience and trust the plan, and you can end up with $52.5 million. And that's sort of what has happened with Drake or Patrick. Understand that there can be bumps in the road. You may not play right away. There may be, you're going to have to go out there and earn it. And Drake or Patrick talked about Terrence Newman come up to him at one point and saying, I'm not going to give you my position. You're going to have to come take it. And how he had so much more respect for him after that conversation. And they want that to be sort of the new legacy of this group going forward, is a bunch of guys, bunch of young players trying to take positions from older ones, and understanding that that can be a fight uphill at times when you're young in this organization. But eventually, when it comes time to get paid, the Bengals will respect that if you eventually make your way up that hill. You know, and that's not a bad example to set. I'll credit them. It's not a bad example to set. And if Drake or Patrick continues to ascend, this will look like a great contract. The question will end up being is if he does, or if last year was the best we saw out of him.
Yeah, I mean, clearly the Bengals had to feel he was still ascending. You know, in his, now as he enters his late 20s as a corner in the league. And yeah, he's been a good, I mean, he's good to us in terms of the media. He's always available. And I think he took good lessons from Terrence Newman and Leon Hall. And while we can, you know, go round and round on Adam Jones's off the field issues, he's widely regarded with being the right type of guy in terms of film study. and playing cornerback. So I think Dre is, I think this, Paul, I don't know if you've sensed this at all. I don't know. I think Dre has taken some of the good parts of those older guys he's been around. You know, even going back to a few years ago when you and Sam went down with him to Gadsden, Alabama, and he even talked about like changing his diet and paying more attention to his body, like those things. So, you know, you still got to produce at the end of the day. So he needs to have 3 to 4 interceptions and not have as many penalties and, you know, break up 15 passes. Like it all is part of it. But especially with Darquez, man, Quez is a quiet dude. He's not going to ruffle feathers a lot. I'm sure he'll tell us he's frustrated, but like that's going to be a thing. You know, William Jackson III is going to want to play. So, I mean, he's going to be that guy now who's going to have to help that room. And, you know, but this is what the Bengals do. So, Andrew Whitworth, yes, he left. Omotau Pekko, yes, he left. But guess what? Those guys signed multiple extensions with this team. That's how they got to where they were and the forces of nature they were in that locker room. So, Dre Kirkpatrick, 5 years. I mean, by the end of it, he'll be a 10-year veteran with the Bengals. So clearly they felt all of those things were coming together for him to be that kind of guy.
Yeah, and that's just – I don't know if before last year or even at some points during last year we thought that it would end this way, that they would say – they would pinpoint him as you're the type of guy that we want to be around here as a leader. But I do think Dre is a great guy to accept that, and it will be really important to him to be that. And I think he does take a lot of pride in that as a guy that can sort of set the tone and the culture. He talks a lot about being a guy that can set a tone and trying to always, you know, whether he's talking about keeping things loose, whether he's talking about bringing the juice, whether he's talking about swagger. He's always talking about that stuff. He's always thinking about his team. He's not always thinking about just doing his job. He's thinking about making sure everybody is feeling good and making sure everybody else is on the right path. That's pretty rare for a young guy, I think. And that is one thing that he does have that I think they like, and that's one a reason why they would want to invest in him. And he's only become more and more mature as he's gone along. And he obviously loves Cincinnati, and he loves the organization. He clearly loves Marvin Lewis. He made that very clear during his press conference. And so I think that's something this team certainly can see when you're talking about, is this a guy who you want to have around until he's 32? That is the type of stuff. Those are the type of characteristics that you want to invest in, and the big reason why they did. Okay, so this now brings us to where we stand. Brandon LaFell is back on a 2-year contract for $10 million. That does some interesting things with what now will happen at receiver. You know, I still think receiver is very much in play for them, even at 9, if we believe what they say about best player available. And I do, that if they believe that Corey Davis or John Ross in his 4.22 40 or Mike Williams from Clemson are the real deal and the next big thing and the perfect complement to AJ Green, and they're sitting there at 9, they're going to take them regardless of the fact that Brandon LaFell is now there for the next 2 years. You know, they released James Wright. There's room in that room to bring anybody in that could be a true impact player. And they look 2-3 down years down the line. They've got to start thinking about that. I mean, I think you view it the same way. I don't know that this affects how they view the receiver position outside of there would have been a little bit more urgency if he would have bolted.
Yeah, I mean, Brandon LaFell was number 3 on the priority list. I think it was Witt, it was Dre, and it was Brandon LaFell. He clearly was going to be the easiest one to get done. But his skill set, his age, his contract, you're right, Paul, I don't think his re-signing changes their draft strategy at all. Or their desire to add speed to the room, or let's be honest, even if a certain guy is there that fits his physical profile, his skill set, I don't think that changes. You know what I mean? So I think he was just a good guy to get in the fold, and they can kind of wipe away searching for where they were a year ago when they were looking for a guy like Brandon LaFell.
Yeah. And they really love what Brandon LaFell did for AJ Green. They felt like he really helped AJ take his game to the next level when he was out there last year. And there's a continuity factor of Dalton and LaFell did seem to find a bit of their stride last year when Green was out. Now, a lot of that's opportunity, but I thought that they grew as a connection too. And that is something that you maybe want to bring back and you feel pretty good about. They still need speed. And that's going to be a element that they're going to address somewhere in the draft. They're going to try to find somebody with some speed. But, you know, they're covered in case that they don't. You can't count on finding that in the draft. You kind of have to keep your bases covered, and they do with an emerging young room with Tyler Boyd and Alex Erickson and Cody Kaur. You got to feel that all of those guys should take a pretty big step in their second year as well. You get continuity with LaFell, and I think you're okay with that passing game where it's at, and the big reason why they decided to pay him. Rex Burkhead is on the tour right now.
Yeah.
So he went to Atlanta and New England today. And, of course, since he's in New England, everybody assumes he's a perfect fit. You know, coach's son, scrappy, gritty, lunch pail carrying, gym rat. White guy.
Yeah.
it's sort of everybody when Rex Burkhead became a free agent said, oh, New England. We know why.
Yeah, I think Rex, and we talked about this, is looking for a good opportunity to play. The way this market's going, I think a lot of us thought he would get a couple-year deal just because his age, no tread on the tires, he's flashed. But, what is this? This is mid-March, Paul, and not a single running back has come off the board. You know what I mean? AP, Jamal Charles, Eddie Lacy. I mean, granted, everyone is a flawed player at this point. Age, injury, salary demand, all that stuff. Get it. But I don't know. I mean, at this point, it makes you wonder. I mean, maybe he'll be surprised and get that. But you were probably one of the first guys to say kind of a one-year prove-it deal somewhere. I don't know. Maybe he gets 3 years and nine somewhere, 3 years and eight. After all this, and that'd be great for him, but it's surprising. I mean, I he's trying to find somewhere to play, obviously.
Yeah, James White's contract is up after the 17 season, and I think you can make a lot of parallels between the games of those two guys. They play very similar. Both are very good receivers out of the backfield, and can carry it a few times you need to, but they mostly would play the role of catching it for New England. So you can see that connection of versatile and the different things that they can do. So I could see a 2 year deal for Rex in New England or something like that on a, you know, two for four or something, and two for five, whatever, then to give him a little bit of cash and to be there to play along with White and then also be there when White leaves. Who knows? I mean, New England has been outside of the box, and they're doing what they do best right now. That's finding underrated, underutilized personnel everywhere, whether it's on the 53-man, whether it's in free agency, via trade, you name it. They are working their butts off, and they're improving a team that just won the Super Bowl. If they get Rex, you know Bengals fans will get sick watching him turn into a great player for New England and play in the Super Bowl. And, you know, we'll be in the Super Bowl at Minneapolis next year writing about Rex Burkhead instead of writing about Mohamed Sanu, right? or Matt Langle and James Devlin. Who knows?
That's one of those things, though. I'm struggling here because, again, this goes back to how we started this podcast, Paul. With like, why don't they re-sign the old guys, but they never let the young guys play? Like, they just gave Giovanni Bernard a $15 million extension. He's a better player than Rex Burkhead. Rex Burkhead is a similar skill set as Giovanni Bernard. So which is it? You know what I mean? It's like if Gio was becoming an unrestricted free agent at this point, he'd be getting money and people would be like, oh my God, Gio Bernard is leaving. Like, you can't, like, not everyone can play, not everyone can stay, and they're going to draft a running back, like, if not two. So, you know, we broke the news Joe Mixon was in town. Like, they're going to pick a guy in the top half of the draft because Jeremy Hill likely is going to leave after a year. And then, you know what I mean? So I get it. You know, you always want the guy that you used to have and then he plays somewhere else. But that, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I thought the best route since day one here was letting Rex go and drafting a guy to come in and start playing and have a rotation of draft guy, Jeremy Hill, and Giovanni Bernard in some capacity as your three. And then you could even bring back Cedric Pierman as your special teams fourth guy. And, you know, to me, that's always been the best strategy. Don't pay running backs. Definitely don't pay multiple running backs. There's a reason that they have their best years in their first four and they're their cheapest. Stop paying running backs. The one reason that Rex is a slight, stray away from that concept is that he won't cost much, and B, he doesn't have hardly any tread on his tires. So he's sort of like a rookie in that capacity. But he's still not. So it doesn't make any sense to pay a guy when you in a deep draft you can just draft a guy to come in and be that other guy next to, Gio or in with Jeremy and whatever. However they want that, they can figure out how that plays out. They can find somebody who can do what Rex can or better in this draft easily.
Yeah, and I think that's why he's still out there touring around. To be honest. You know what I mean? Like, while he hasn't had a lot of carries, he's also not 20, 21 years old and can be drafted and have a rookie deal that pays him like $800,000 for the next 4 years. So, I mean, that's part of the reason, too, why, you know, I think, you know, he's going to go somewhere else, in my opinion, and Bengals fans will get mad about it because that's just what they'll do. And, you know. But
I don't think it matters much.
No, I yeah, you're right. If he goes to a place like New England, it's fair because it's like, oh, they went there. And yes, the Patriots will use him. But guess what? The Patriots are unlike 31 other NFL teams, A, because they win all the time and kind of cheat a lot of the times. But also, they just have the X factor at head coach and with those coordinators that they use all 53 guys on their roster. And yes, every team, they are the standard. Yes, Bengals fans should want their team to operate that way, their coaches to coach that way. But let's just be real about it, Paul. Like, the reason they are who they are is because they're the only ones who can do that. So, I'll just leave it there.
You're right. 31 other teams wish they were the Patriots. The Bengals are not the only one. Connor Barwin in town as we record, no deal. Met with Marvin Lewis, had meetings with the coaching staff. He was released by Philadelphia, obviously has local ties here, having played his ball at UC. I wrote a story in December. I actually linked to it on Twitter if you want to go back, about his ties to UC and Cincinnati still being a big part of his life for him. And so him keeping open the possibility of coming back. Look, Paul Gunther wants pass rushers. He doesn't care how he can get them anyway, even if it's in a smaller number of snaps, which I think you would be looking at with Connor Barwin, is just a pass rush specialist, not playing a ton of snaps. Now, if they can find a deal that works for both sides in that, more power to you. The more pass rushers you can have, the better, and you cover your butt in case you can't get one in the first couple rounds of this draft. I don't really have a problem with it. It does fit a mold of aging guy cut from other team to come in and play defensive end linebacker. And the previous two did not go very well in that capacity.
No, it's, and again, I've sort of been on this drum. I mentioned it earlier with the guards. We've written about it a lot with the Bengals needing to find that 26 to 27 year old veteran that has produced, that has some upside. Not saying Connor has nothing left at 30 years old, but it's been a while since he was regularly bringing down NFL quarterbacks and really being a disruptive force. Maybe playing next to Geno Atkins or Vontaze Burfict can change those things, but, I don't know. Maybe. It's just one of those things. Sure, they need to get to 90. But they don't bring in guys like that to have them not make the team. You know what I mean? I would really have a hard time believing they'd sign a veteran just to release him in August, so or September. So whatever. It'd be good for us. Domata and Witt are out of locker room, so as our Paul Docherty likes to say, I root for me, and Connor Barwin would be a go-to guy on a regular basis. So
yeah,
and he'd be good in the community, all those good things. So
oh yeah, I mean he's been unbelievable in every community he's played in.
Right.
He's really a top 1%. Great guy type deal, that I'm sure everybody here would be proud and happy to have back, and certainly the two of us at the front of that list, which would be great for us. But outside of that, you would just want somebody who can give you a little bit of third down oomph, and if they believe that he has a little bit of that left in him, which he probably does have a year or two, which in a smaller role he could really excel. He's probably worth a shot, and they're going to see if they can get a deal done. All right, that kind of covers where everybody is at with free agency right now. Because Bengals fans love to get angry about this, I should just run down where the comp picks stand as of right now. This type of stuff can change. Obviously, you can get pushed barely out as they did on a bunch of picks this year, or you can move back in. But for the most part, Zeitler's going to be a 3. In the 2018 draft, Zeitler, $12 million per, that huge deal. That's going to be a third-round pick, the top pick that's possible to get. Andrew Whitworth is going to be a 5. He would have been higher, but if you have 10 accrued seasons in the league, you cannot get a comp pick better than a fifth rounder. That's part of the rules that they found out back in 2009 when Pittsburgh only got a 5 for Alan Faneca and sent something to the league like, hey, what the hell? How do we only get a 5? And they told him this rule. These comp pick formulas are so weird and unnecessarily mysterious, but that's part of it. So he'll probably be a 5, and it's looking like right now currently sitting a 6 for Domata Peko, and then we'll see. Maybe they even could get something for Rex Burkhead or whatever. Bengals fans are so mad that people leave and you get comp picks for them, and they think all the comp picks they've ever had suck, and so they're going to continue to suck. And why would you want more picks? Okay, I'm just not going to do that again, but don't kill the messenger. I'm just relaying what the compensatory picks currently look like for those guys. Let's move on before Bengals fans want to hang me again. So, all right. So, I'm a man of my word, Jim. You know this. I've bought dinner at the precinct when I had to buy dinner at the precinct. I remember a couple years ago on this podcast, I sang a song of some sort for a bet that I lost. I don't remember what it was, but I do remember singing. I said that if Andrew Whitworth was not re-signed with the Bengals, I would do 5 mock drafts in 5 days. I am going to pull that off this week, and we're going to start it here, right here today. And the first one is going to happen right now on the BBP where this whole fiasco began. Not happy about it. But, so today is going to be my, these are all 9-pick mock drafts, by the way, because the Bengals are at 9. We're doing a lot of 9 picks this year. 9 pick. First one, I'm doing a mock draft of the best mock drafts. That's right. What are the best mock drafts out there? So I'm going to pick. Now, do you want to draft with me, Jim? Do you want to challenge me and get your voice in this?
I can help you out a little bit with how you're doing this, for sure.
Okay. No. I did not. I said I would do 5 straight days of mock drafts. That's what I said. I can do whatever kind of mock draft I want to do. You don't have to mock draft the NFL. Maybe I'll do an NBA mock draft, all right? Maybe I'll study up. Maybe I'll call Ryan Russillo, and he can tell me about who are the best players to take in an NBA mock draft. I said I'd do 5 mock drafts in 5 days, so I'm doing 5 mock drafts in 5 days, starting with best mock drafts mock draft. Number one pick for me. I'll start with number one, and we'll alternate, all right? All right, number one, I'm going Todd McShay. I know he's ESPN, and it's like corporate America, but he's continually been very good. He's accurate with, if you look at his mock drafts and how they've hit, he's done a pretty good job of being in the right zone and definitely understanding the players as well as anybody. I know it's ESPN, and it's like picking Walmart. But, you know, I think Todd is as good as it gets at doing his job with that. So I'm going Todd McShay, number one overall mock draft.
Yeah, he would have been – he was my lone ESPN guy that I would go with. It's funny that you kind of mentioned this. My favorite mock draft watching, because people know by now I really don't like mock drafts, NBADraftExpress.com. That's my favorite mock draft.
Outside. Oh, you're going NBA.
Yeah. So that's the one I like the best. That's the one I check when I covered the NBA. I would kind of peek at those guys. So yeah, NBA Draft Express.
Wow. I as much outside of the box as I was with this, I didn't even think to go outside of the NFL. Now I feel like I've not properly prepared for this draft. Oh no. Oh man, that's tough. This is tough then. Okay. Well, I'm still gonna stick. I'm gonna stick to my board, and I'm gonna go. I feel like people might not think of this, but I'm gonna say, I'm gonna say Dane Brugler. At CBS, he has a great job. His draft handbook is incredible. He is as well researched on these guys and the true value where they end up as anybody. CBS Sports. I'm gonna go with him at 3. So, cross him off the board. All right, you're back up.
Yeah, while there are a lot of national guys, there's a couple locals who I think do good work. And one of those is out in L.A. He finally has a football team. He's got a couple football teams to cover for the first time in a long time. Sam Farmer over at the L.A. Times.
Nice.
Yeah, there's a handful of local guys. Like, we're local, but we're all national because we're on Twitter and all that stuff. But there's a few guys, and we'll see if you go to my other one because I got a couple here in the top 9. But I like Sam, and I think he does, having had to be like a local national for all these years. I like Sam, and you add in the local intrigue of 2 LA teams now. His mock drafts are fun.
That's a nice pick. I had him top of my board. I should have gone with him at 3. I should have. I think I blew it. I think I didn't stick to my board. I don't know why, and now I'm mad at myself. I'm screwing this up. All right. Number five, I'm going to go with Daniel Jeremiah from NFL.com, Move the Sticks. He's another great draft resource. Used to be a scout. He knows that world really in and out and does a great job. So Daniel Jeremiah is my number 5, and we move over to you. But I'm still pissed about Sam Farmer. I wanted that one.
I guess I could get one company guy here on this one, but I'm going to go with Nate Davis over at USA Today. I just kind of like seeing his stuff, and no in-depth reasons why other than that, but it's just he's a name that I thought I would go with.
Walking the company line is what you're doing. Yeah. Up the Gannett chain. I see how it is. Listen, just because you picked Nate Davis doesn't mean you're going to get a raise or a promotion, okay? I see what you're trying to do. You know, everybody at USA Today listens to the BBP every week, including an hour and 10 minutes into it. They're always sticking around for this.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt. Oh, yeah. Okay, so at number seven, I am going to go with, you know what? I'm going to go with Will Brinson, which might surprise you, but you know why? Because he always does mock trades. And not enough people do mock trades. And Will doesn't really care about getting anything really right. He mostly cares about entertaining.
Yeah.
And so I need that entertainment, and I want that entertainment. So I'm for that because of all the action that you get at the Brinson mock. I'm going with Will at seven.
For eighth, and again, it kind of like you know my pick there with Nate Davis at USA Today, part of the Gannett Network, is Chris Burke over at SI.com, and it's largely. And I'll say Chris because I see him more often, but I know a lot of the MMQB writers will do kind of their lists of things. Really, it's more of an SI thing. I just like looking at theirs. I mean, it's a sharp looking page. So I'll go with Chris Burke from SI.
Okay, I'll close it off with the ninth and final pick. And I'll go with our friends. With this being the Cincinnati pick, I'll kind of do a Cincinnati pick. And I'll go with our friends over at Pro Football Focus, Steve Palazzolo in particular. They obviously dive as deep into the analytics of the college players as anybody. They do the full – I mean, they're incredible how deep they go down into the college game. And we know pro teams use it. They almost all subscribe to it. So I'm going to go with PFF. And with such number a homer. Nine. Oh, yeah, well, whatever. Homer, you're the one trying to get a promotion out of this thing. I'm just, it's my opinion, and I'm allowed to do whatever I want to do with my mock drafts. All right. Well, on that note, I do believe we had some requests for music that were put out there. On Twitter this week. Of course, I have so many. I don't even have the time to go through. My mentions are just a cesspool right now. I mean, it is ridiculous what has happened to my mentions. I can't hardly even keep up with it. But there's a lot on there.
In honor of the first of five mock drafts, we're at the end of free agency. I'm sure our next BBP or two, we'll talk about a couple unexciting Bengals free agent moves. We're going to start to transition into your wheelhouse of the draft. So my suggestion, and it's only 90 seconds, instrumental, the title, Most Desperate Guy You Know, off the Draft Day movie soundtrack. Because I just think there's so many ties into this.
Oh.
But that's just my suggestion. I know the fans are out there, BBP, trying to do some music for us. I appreciate that. But that's my pick for this week, just because I think it means a lot. Maybe we can hit some we can clean up the mentions and maybe get a fan or a follower request in the next couple weeks. But that's just my thought.
Yeah, no, that's a very good thought. Draft day only makes sense. It's sad what's happened to my life here on this podcast. So many things have gone wrong that I'm just going to go with it. I'm just going to go with it. I got no other choice other than to suck it up and take this week on the chin and go to Sacramento while we're at it. Why don't we just do that? Why don't we throw that in there? I'm headed out with – you're obviously going to help out with NKU this week. I'm helping out with UC. We'll still be following all the Bengals stuff, obviously, but we're kind of lending a helping hand with all the basketball coverage going on this week. So I'm going to Sacramento and doing mock drafts. Maybe I'll have Mick Cronin do a mock draft for me of Mick Cronin's favorite top nine tournament games. Or something like that. I don't know, but maybe I'll have to talk to him.
Yeah,
he probably won't go for that.
Probably. Maybe his top nine NCAA officials.
Ooh, that's a good one. I assume his number one pick will be whoever's doing his game.
Yeah.
Or worst calls against UC. And because there's some bad ones out there. Mick loves to complain about calls.
Yeah.
So maybe we can maybe find that.
Top 10 UC early tournament exits. Top 9. I don't know. I'm not trolling. Anyway.
You might be. Oh man.
Yeah, don't write that one.
Don't at me. Yeah. Don't at any of us on there. We're just trying to end a podcast. That's all. All right. So on that note, let's get out of here. Thanks to everybody for following around and giving me a hard time over this whole mock draft thing. I appreciate you making fun of me. It wouldn't be as fun if I was just doing this and no one cared. So anyway, the most desperate guy you know from the Draft Day soundtrack. That's me. All right, we'll talk to you next week on the BBB.